Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian Insight, podcast number 224, recording this on Friday, the 21st of September, 2012. Just the two of us this week. I'm Steve Litchfield, and with me I have...
Rafe Blanford. Hello, everybody.
Yeah, he's back from America. I think you were back from America last time, but you've got definite hands-on experience of the Lumia 920 running Windows Phone. We mention that purely because at the very end of this podcast, we're going to be discussing possible upgrade paths for Symbian owners and whether the 920 is a suitable choice or whether you should look elsewhere. So there's a bit of a tease for you. Let's start this podcast with a few items of news. Bell refresh for the Nokia E6 first appeared about a day or two after the N8 and E7 refreshes, Rafe, but then... And it stayed that way with just a few product codes for quite a while. I've looked on Navifirm, which is perhaps a tool I shouldn't really be mentioning, but it does appear that most of the European product codes have got it, but not the UK ones. So I took my life in my hands and flashed my E6 to Bell Refresh, the European generic product code, and it works absolutely fine. So it's worth talking about just what's included because it's different from the Bell Refresh for the N8, E7, etc. The core apps are the same. You get the new web browser version 8.3. You do get Maps Suite 3.9 is built in. Qt 4.8 is built in. Microsoft Office Suite all built in. So all of that's good stuff. You do get the Flash Video fix. You do get a fix for the key lock switch bug. Now, I don't know whether you've seen this, Rafe. On my E6, it was forever. You'd flick the key lock and it would lock the screen and then immediately unlock again. You'd have to flick the switch two or three times for it to take. Does that ring a bell?
I never saw that problem. I mean, I saw a lot of people complaining about it, but it wasn't ever an issue on my E6, which I was pretty grateful for, because of all the lock methods, I have to say that slidey key is my favourite still, because there's, you know, it's just a good way to do it. It's kind of an analog for what's happening on the screen, I guess. And I can't say I'm a fan of a sort of just the generic lock button, which you tend to get on other devices. And it's probably one of the hardware bits I miss most from the Symbian devices when I'm using Nokia's Windows Phone devices.
Yeah, well, anyway, in Symbian Bell, Nokia Bell, it wasn't very well debounced, to use the technical term. And so basically they've tweaked the software to ignore minor contact changes over a period of, say, 10 milliseconds, and then it behaves better. So it's now perfectly fixed, which is very, very good, because that was a big beef of mine. You don't get so many extra widgets. You get a bookmark widget, a mobile data counter, which is admittedly very, very useful. And you, curiously, you get the weather now, i.e. what's happening, which you could look out the window and see that. But you don't get the weather forecast one. Can you think of any reason why they might have done one but not the other?
I can only guess that they only had so much time and had to pick one over the other. It seems a bit of a shame, because I'd actually have thought the weather forecast one is, you know, more useful. I mean, of course, the reason some of these widgets may or may not be appearing on the E6 is because of the different screen resolution, but also the different pixel density. It means they are probably having to tweak the widgets specifically for the E6, and obviously that does require some work. And when you've got limited resources, I guess you have to pick and choose which ones to do. And no doubt they've done some consumer research to work out which ones are the most popular, maybe concentrated the resources there, but I don't know that for sure. That's kind of a guess.
Anyway, not to worry. As I posted in a different story, Cool Weather, that's QOO Weather, and it's a third-party widget, and it provides a full weather forecast. I think it's a four-day forecast in widget form, and it works perfectly on the E6. So never mind Nokia and their absence of a weather forecast widget. Go and get the Cool Weather one.
Yeah, and I would say it's better than the standard weather widget anyway, so I'd recommend it for anyone who's kind of looking for a little bit extra from their weather widget. You know, the ability to see all the information at a glance rather than having to go into, you know, the weather application, I think is a great benefit.
Yeah, so taking all that into account, plus the usual usability improvements, fixes and optimizations, it's well worth looking out for this Bell refresh when it does hit the E6. The long-standing gripes, and this is the reason why I've been fiddling around with Navifirm and slightly dodgy flashing software, is the fact that I was trying to find a way of putting Symbian Anna back on the E6. Now, Rafe, when Symbian Anna was on the E6, you could navigate the home screen of the device using just the D-pads. You could go up and down the different widgets on the screen, the panels and the profiles and the clock and so forth, as well as going left to right different home screens. When they went to Nokia Bell, you lost that facility. You had to use the touchscreen to tap on widgets, which many people have been rather annoyed about. Did that bother you at all?
Yeah, that definitely annoyed me, because the E6 was, you know, I like the fact it was a hybrid device, and it, you know, was one of the few times where kind of the legacy of S60 or Symbian, whatever you want to call it, was actually a good thing, because this was a device you could use basically either as an entirely as a touch device or, you know, with the keys. And so it's something I personally use a lot. So when I upgraded it, it kind of annoyed me. And it was almost the thing that put me off using the device day in, day out, which I had been for a long time. And I had switched to other devices, to be fair, by that time. But it seems it was one of those things. I really think someone should have thought about that a little bit more. Because if you think about the size of the E6 screen, you know, it isn't a big touchscreen device. And that D-pad is very easy to use. And of course, it does work fine in other applications and a lot of the rest of the time. And you are, to be fair, always using the touchscreen for kind of the menu bar or the soft keys at the bottom. But it just struck me as, you know, someone hadn't quite, you know, thought it through as much as they might have done. Because, you know, a lot of the other improvements in Nokia Bell are well worth having. Don't get me wrong. And I do prefer the look of it. And I think it's an easier user experience to kind of get into to use on a day-to-day basis, but that one thing was a big fly in the ointment for me.
Yeah. Also of note is the fact that the web browser is still resolutely has these blinking toolbars at the bottom and the status bar at the top, and there's no full screen mode as there was in Symbian Anna. So the new version of web may be far more HTML5 compliant, but it's a lot less usable on the landscape mode E6. My workaround, Rafe, is to just install Opera Mobile, which works rather well.
I was going to say, I've done exactly the same thing. And you know, usually it wouldn't be a problem because you know, these bars take up relatively little space on a portrait screen. But of course, the E6 is already relatively limited in screen size, so you don't want anything taking away from it. But yes, Opera Mobile works fantastically well on the E6. And I guess I've been using Opera Mobile on the Symbian devices for so long, it's almost become the default for me. It's still a little bit irritating when you're, you know, in some cases, you're clicking on the link from somewhere and it opens in the standard browser. In some cases, it will get around that now, of course, but not everywhere. But yes, install Opera Mobile or indeed Opera Mini. I mean, Opera Mini is also a pretty good browser for this device because I find it difficult to see that people are going to be doing loads and loads of browsing on something like the E6, you know, because the screen size is such that it does make it a bit hard to read, unless you've got very young eyes and can put it down at the low zoom level, which you can do, of course, with the pixel density on the E6. But to my mind, yeah, Opera Mobile is the solution here.
Yeah, and I've got something I want to fiddle with and then mention. But so while I'm doing that, I want to just pass Rafe on to the next story. Qt is now fully part of Digia, and this is right up your street, Mr. Blandford.
It is indeed, yeah. This is kind of not the final chapter in the Qt story in one sense, because it's very much going to go on in the future. But this is definitely a handing of the beacon from Nokia to Digia. We talked in the podcast a little while back how Digia was acquiring Qt from Nokia, and it's really the fallout of the big strategy changes. And it's not all that long ago that Nokia bought Qt, going back a few years, of course, but it became part of the vision for a renewed Symbian, and of course, going forward, MeeGo and that, you know, Linux strategy, maybe on the lower end devices as well. But as we know, going back to February 11th, none of that quite worked out as intended. And I would maintain that Qt was incredibly elegant in its approach in this cross-platform developer environment. You know, had a lot of potential and is kind of, in one sense, the saddest casualty of the big strategy change, because I really think that would have made a difference in terms of the way developers addressed mobile devices when porting stuff across and thinking about the way they did things. And you know, a lot of the developers I've spoken to have said, you know, it was an elegant language to develop for, particularly with QML and the declarative UI. But anyway, that's all kind of by the by now. After those strategy changes, of course, Qt was left as a bit of an orphan within Nokia. The reason for it, you know, being owned by Nokia had really gone away, and so that's why the sale to Digia happened. And we have now got to the point where they've actually formally taken over, and there's some photographs on the Digia website showing how they're taking down the kind of the Nokia flag and putting up the Digia one instead. And I thought that was rather symbolic of what's going on. You know, Digia are very much going to continue with Qt, and actually from a mobile point of view, they're going to make sure there's strong ports to both iOS and Android. Obviously the Symbian one is still going to exist, but it'll be very much, I imagine, in maintenance mode. It's probably been perfected as much as it's going to be. We won't see any major releases there. Certainly we won't be getting Qt 5 on Symbian, for example. It's going to be on Qt 4.8 for the rest of time. Outside of those mobile platforms, I don't think we'll see very much. You know, there was some people wondering whether we might get it on Windows Phone, but I think that's unlikely given the relative roles that Microsoft are taking, the way it's doing its developer approach. But You can't rule it out as impossible, but certainly I don't expect Nokia or Digia to be directly involved in that. There may be some kind of experimental port at some point in the future. But as I say, the way the operating system is put together does kind of mitigate against that. But I think Qt's got a pretty bright future, both on those mobile platforms I mentioned, of course, and its traditional strength, the embedded systems. But as I say, it has now sort of departed from Nokia. So I guess it's probably one of the last times we're going to mention it on the podcast here, unless we're talking about some of the problems it's caused on Symbian devices. We may get onto that later in the podcast. But yes, kind of a sad goodbye to it. But I'm glad that it's found a good home. And there's, I'm sure, lots of Qt developers, you know, either listening to this podcast or out there who are pleased to see Digia giving it a good home. And many of the people who work for Qt have been able to move over to Digia as well. I understand it's about 100 in all. Certainly not everybody. There have been quite a few redundancies as a result of this. So there is a human impact as ever. But yeah. One more story along the kind of the Symbian Windows Phone strategy change, I guess.
Of which more in a moment. Just to say, I've been fiddling with the E6 while you've been talking. Just I had a random thought, Rafe. Now, when most of the links I open in web pages on my Symbian smartphone, most of them tend to come from social networks. So, for example, in my case, Gravity. And it's just worth noting that many people will know that Gravity includes, you know, previews of things like images that people post online. It also includes its own browser. And if you tap on a link in Gravity, so if someone posts an update about a web page they like, you tap on the link and it says, do you want to open this in Gravity or in your web browser? If you just tap on open, i.e. open Gravity, Gravity's browser lets you work full screen with all the other usual, well, most of the usual browser accoutrements, but full screen without the blessed toolbar. So that's a huge tip. So certainly if you're a Gravity user, you don't actually need web most of the time at all. So yeah. Obviously have Opera Mobile installed, have Gravity installed, and basically you're done.
Yeah, that's right. And it's obviously something I've used. This is because, you know, generally the developer of Gravity is actually using the web browser as kind of a component, and that does give you the option to kind of switch off all the toolbars. You just have to be slightly careful in that you can end up with multiple browsers open, which can have some memory implications, and something sometimes things will shut down in the background. But yeah, that's a good tip, because the kind of the default browser setting that you will find buried in the settings application does let you switch to an alternative browser, and Opera being one of those. But it tends to only work, I think, in the messaging application. It doesn't work with the third-party apps, which is a bit of a shame, but the APIs just don't exist to enable that to happen. So yes, good tip there, Steve. I would always use Gravity's kind of built-in application when I'm following things from a social network.
It's very odd that Symbian Web doesn't have an option to turn the toolbar off anyway, whether you're on a big-screened phone or not. It seems like an obvious thing to put in settings.
Yes, I'd have thought so. I mean, to be fair, it's been a while since I've used it extensively, because, as I said, I've been using Opera Mobile. And as you say, it was there in earlier versions of the browser. So I suppose it's possible we might see it come back in a small update in the future, but I probably wouldn't hold my breath at this point in time.
Okay. Here's a story that you can definitely have more input to, Rafe. Nokia Suite has bridged the gap, apparently, to Windows Phone. Well, I noticed this. An update appeared for the latest beta of Nokia Suite, and the line in the changelog was, copy your contacts, calendar, and photos to a Nokia Lumia phone, which is a tiny bit disingenuous, I reckon. I did dig through as to exactly what happened, and I put the screenshots up in our story, but essentially, Nokia Suite now talks to SkyDrive, and specifically your contacts, calendar, and photo storage on Microsoft SkyDrive, which, of course, you can then synchronize at a later date to a Nokia Lumia phone. So I think their changelog was rather over-abbreviated here, but it does at least give people another option for taking their PIM data and core stuff over to a new Windows Phone device.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing about this is it's making it easier to copy your data from your old phone to your new phone if you've upgraded to a Lumia device. I mean, yes, I would also be a bit sceptical about the use of this, especially as there are some pretty major caveats, which I'll get to in a minute. And actually, Steve wrote this up very well in his piece on this. So if you want more detail, go and read that. But it does mean that, you know, there is this kind of transferability. And, you know, there's already the contacts transfer on the Lumia devices, which enables you to copy from a Symbian device. That works well. But obviously, there is other data on your device that you might want to copy across. And this is kind of being a helper utility, and it makes sense to make it part of Nokia suite, really. And so, as Steve is saying, that it's copying stuff to SkyDrive, and then you can access it very easy from your Lumia device. And you know, that's things like photos, but also calendar items, and you can also copy contacts as well. There are some caveats on here, as Steve noted in the story, and just to summarize them briefly, he says there's a possibility that only a random selection of 100 contacts will be copied to SkyDrive. That's going to be a problem, because I think a lot of people have more than 100 contacts, and repeated calendar items cannot be copied. Again, I think quite a lot of people have repeated calendar items. And on the photos, there's actually a size limit, and this is kind of standard for SkyDrive, or has been for a while. I think it's 2048 times 2048 pixels. Of course, a lot of the Symbian devices actually have cameras that are bigger than that. You know, if you're on something like the N8, that will certainly affect you. So they get downsized. I wouldn't get too wound up about that. If there's photos that are really valuable for you, you probably already copied them off the device, and I'd say copy them from your PC. If you want them on your phone, either copy them onto SkyDrive or Point Zune, the sync application that comes with the Lumia devices, and it will actually copy across the photos for you. So there are options there. It's nice to see Nokia kind of think about people who will be moving from one device to another, but it did feel a bit half-hearted, this, and there's certainly room for a lot of improvement.
Yeah, and I wouldn't get too hung up over some of those caveats, because this is unashamedly in beta.
Yes,
and you can bet that those limitations and caveats will get significantly more relaxed over the next few weeks and months. Now, this is an interesting one, Rafe. The Nokia CC3046, which is the official kind of a plastic, grippy, robust case for the Nokia 808. It grips around the back of the phone and also specifically covers the camera island with a kind of pop-off tethered cap. Now, I got sent one of these as part of the review package for the 808, and I hated it because the pop-off cap did a wonderful job of protecting the camera, and a terrible job because it also cut off the audio from the speaker, so you couldn't actually hear the speaker sound very well, which is a big no-no for me listening to podcasts. So I took my trusty hacksaw and drill and various other tools and hacked a rather ugly gash at the bottom of my pop-off cap, which then let me listen to my podcast, but it did look rather awful. Thankfully, someone at Nokia Accessories Division was paying attention and thought, you know, that he's got a point there. They went off and redesigned the pop-off cap with a nice little neatly machined slot and even a little plastic seal that stops dust getting in through the slot into the rest of the camera island. So if you go and look at the story, this is now shipping from the likes of Amazon. So if you buy a 3046 from here on in, you should get the modified version that lets you hear the speaker, which I think is a jolly good thing.
And this does conjure up some lovely mental images. First of all, Steve getting his chainsaw out and hacking away at his case, and then Nokia keeping him under surveillance and saying, oh, that's a terribly good idea for modifying the case. Let's put that into the production line. As much as I would like to think it's entirely Steve-inspired, I mean, much like the 808 is kind of Steve's dream device, I think this case was kind of one of his dream cases as well, except there was something wrong with it. And so, you know, designed for Steve Litchfield, the 808, and this case is now designed for Steve Litchfield. I suspect there's probably been quite a bit of consumer feedback about this one. So although I'd love to give the credit entirely to Steve, I suspect it's a little more complex than that. But nonetheless, it's great to see this. I mean, I've used this case as well. And, you know, it's a good design because it does provide good protection. But the loudspeaker was kind of a fairly startling oversight in the original case design, because, you know, audio is kind of important on the smartphone today.
Yeah, people should note, actually, Rafe, that everything you've been hinting at over the last few podcasts, you have got yourself an 808 as well now. Can I ask how's it going? Is it your main phone? What are your impressions?
It's not my main phone, I have to say. I've actually been maintaining a Nokia 701 as well, and that's really just for the size reason. It's smaller than any of the other devices, and so sometimes it's more convenient to take that. But I've gradually been getting the 808 set up, and it's sort of taking over. It is my main Symbian device. But what I've really been using for was almost a standalone camera, and you know, I don't think I can sort of add any more to the information we've, you know, talked about in the past and published on that. It really is a fantastic camera, and hopefully I'll be able to share some of my favourite shots at some point and come up with a bit of an angle for writing up a feature on that. I've also enjoyed kind of the speed and the way that everything is sort of, you know, tip-top Symbian. that I got used to over the last couple of years is delivered on the 808, and I have no hesitation in continuing to say, you know, it is the best Symbian device that money could buy. And if you want to stay on Symbian, the 808 is definitely the device to get. But I have been continuing to run a Windows Phone device alongside it. And that's partly about, you know, running all about windowsphone.com as well as all about Symbian. People have probably noticed I spend more of my time writing on the Windows Phone stuff now. But in my sort of personal life, I'm continuing to use both devices. But if I'm completely honest, I suspect if I wasn't running the two sites, I might end up using the Windows Phone device more as my day-to-day device. But I'd still have the Symbian device around as kind of my camera. It's probably not what all the Symbian fans want to hear, but for me, it's come down to things like email and the odd bit of web browsing, which is just works better on the Windows Phone device. There's still plenty of things that really irritate me, and I think Windows Phone 8 will correct many, but not all of them. So I expect to continue using the 808 as, you know, a kind of a standby device for, you know, quite some time to come. I mean, to give you an example of this, when I was in New York, I needed offline maps, so I needed a Symbian device for that. Of course, the 808 was, you know, was the one to do that, and it was also being used all the time for cameras. So I got plenty of pictures of skyscrapers, none of that came out maybe as well as I wanted to do. It's very difficult to photograph a skyscraper, but yes, I'm pretty fond of my 808, and you'd find it difficult to prise it away from me.
Yeah, with your comments on Windows Phone there, we are going to get letters, Rafe. We're already getting people saying that you're a Windows Phone apologist, so I'm sure we'll get more of those hate letters in the paper. David was doing a piece of the day, and he put in links to our previous stories on the Nokia 808, and it was rather a long list. And he said that was only half the list, Steve. So there's no shortage of material on allaboutsymbian.com. People will realise editorials, the 808's hardware, its design, its camera, tutorials, you name it, it's up on the site, so do go look. And I make no apologies for gushing about it every now and then, like every week. Let's move on. One new story, this is a nice one. Everyone loves Gravity, and it's worth noting, Ray, there are two versions of Gravity. Now, there's the official sanctioned Nokia store version, which is like a one track of Gravity, and that gets updated once in the blue moon. And there's also the beta track, which is much more exciting, and that's where you get all the new features first. And in fact, if you install the two, they appear as two separate icons on your phone. They actually presumably have different UIDs actually built into the applications. So if people want the very latest version, there is a brand new beta version 2.7 with Facebook cover images. You can now preview SkyDrive, 9GAG, whatever that is, and lots more. It's amazing now the number of sites it can preview without even having to open its own browser. You can now see the number of retweets for each of your tweets. It's really, really slick. Gravity just gets better and better and better. I've even been using it as my default YouTube client, which just goes to show how flexible it is. the important thing is to go to this particular URL, which is mobileways.de/latest/gravity-beta.sisx. And that will always get you the very latest Gravity beta. So highly recommended you get on that route. And that way you get the latest and not something that's 3 or 4 months old at the minimum. So highly recommended. I'm going to do a complete feature, Rafe, on using Gravity in ways that people hadn't previously considered. Things like using it for Google Reader, for YouTube, just how well does it perform? What are the limitations? It's almost got to the stage where I'm going to write an article on the Gravity phone. Basically, you just need Symbian as a kernel for running Gravity, which kind of says it all, really.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're going to, because, you know, normally I don't like to gush over a particular application, but Gravity really is fantastic, and I think generally deserves a ton of praise for not only developing a really first-class application, but continuing to update it. He could quite easily be forgiven for saying, right, that's it as far as Symbian's concerned. I'm going to turn my efforts elsewhere, and he may well do in time, but there's continual improvements, and, you know, many of the kind of improvements are things that have just happened in the APIs on the social networks, you know, Facebook cover images kind of being a good example of that. And, you know, previewing SkyDrive, another a good example of that. And there's more people, of course, using SkyDrive now because that's kind of the default image when you're tweeting from a Windows Phone device. So just, you know, it's kind of an opportunity to say thank you very much to Ginoli. And, you know, for people who use Gravity, I don't think they really need telling that it's a fantastic application. But I would encourage you to upgrade to the latest beta. I mean, Ginoli always says on Twitter that, you know, you have to be careful. It's not, might not be particularly stable. But my experience of using Gravity beta has always been that, you know, it works pretty much in terms of stability like a normal version. And when there is a problem, generally usually issues a bug fix very quickly, and it's often available, you know, through the application or that URL that Steve's just given. So I don't really think people can praise it enough. It really is a fantastic application, and honestly it's one of the reasons I continue to carry, you know, a Symbian device, and I'm sure I'm not the only one who falls into that category.
Yeah, so do watch out for a feature on the site. I'm determined to feature Gravity a bit more, and as I say, there are things I'm finding out it can do that I just didn't know, and I've been using it for 3 years, which is just crazy. Let's move on with a discussion story. Now, I put a piece up, Rafe. This is entitled Drawing a Line in the Sand. N97 owners can have usable firmware or Qt, but not both. If you think back to late 2009, I think it was, the N97 firmware had been fixed at Rafe. I remember we were both at the Symbian smartphone show, and they just released the version 20 firmware with the kinetic scrolling. We were all very excited. The N97 was finally going to be fixed up and finally usable, and it was for a while. And then things like Qt happened. Then things like Nokia messaging happened. And they all swallowed up huge amounts of disk space. QuickOff issued an update. That swallowed up more. And essentially, the poor old system disk on the N97, which was woefully underspecified in the first place, it became completely untenable. Partly, which is why the N97 Mini became a much more usable device long term. But my thought here was, what can be done? Can anything be done at all to get an N97 Classic, which is still a great little form factor and great hardware in some facets, can anything be done to get that running modern Qt applications? And my answer is, not really, no. By the time I started with a completely virgin N97 Classic, I tried custom firmware and I couldn't get Qt working properly. I tried the standard latest firmware and I stripped it the absolute bare minimum, didn't install anything I didn't have to. I put on the latest Qt runtimes and, of course, the latest maps. You can't have the latest going with Obi Maps 3.3, just way too out of date. But with maps and Qt in place, I was down to 3 megabytes free on the system disk, which is completely untenable for any smartphone. And that was without even, you know, downloading any email messages and attachments. So I'm declaring at this point, Rafe, that it is the N97 Classic is a dead device because you just can't run any of the modern applications.
Yeah, I think you're right. And honestly, I think both myself and the audience on the site were kind of admiring Steve for sticking with it as long as he did. I think quite a few of us gave up on the N97 quite a while back. But of course, there were people that had it and continued to use it as a device. And if you wanted to have the latest stuff on it, it was incredibly frustrating. Reading your piece, it did actually bring to mind, you know, actually how much the Symbian devices have come on in the kind of the 2 years since the N97 came out. And, you know, it's actually more changes than we had in the preceding, I would say, 5 years. Okay, we had the move to touch, but looking now at a modern Symbian phone running on Nokia Bell, especially with the kind of the refresh on it or the feature pack 2 that's coming soon, it's a far cry from what was on the N97. But I look back at the N97 with quite a lot of fondness on the form factor. Yes, it was quite fat, but, you know, it was robust. And, you know, that clamshell form factor, I think, is something that's gone away from the smartphone world, and it's a bit of a shame. So I would, you know, quite like to see the N97, or maybe, if I'm honest, the N97 Mini with upgraded internals and running, you know, the latest version of Symbian, because I think that would be a pretty interesting device to own and would be quite attractive. I mean, it's never going to happen, of course. But I will say I admire you, Steve, for sticking with it as long as you did. But I think you've come to the right conclusion, probably one that some of us came to, you know, 6 months or a year ago.
And the sad thing is that the N97 Mini, which fixed the problem with the low system disk, I also sacrificed various things like the large battery and the FM transmitter and the camera lens cover. So on many of the things that were best about the N97 Classic and the things that were best about the N97 Mini really needed to be combined into one device. I noticed that the April Fool for this year, which I put up the Nokia E710, which is basically a photoshopped hybrid of the E7 and the N8, it got tremendous number of comments and people basically saying, yes, Nokia, make this and I'll buy it. I absolutely agree. There's definitely room there for a device with a full QWERTY keyboard, perhaps a hybrid stroke clamshell form factor, bring back a modern communicator with a great camera and a great battery. And I would be absolutely all over it. And I know a lot of other people who would be as well.
Yeah, it is worth saying that for those that do have an N97, you know, you talked about some of the custom firmware and the pieces, so you could go and read it. Actually, you can still have a pretty good experience. You just won't be on the cutting edge in terms of the new applications. But in terms of things that you're able to do with a phone, you know, it is still quite capable. And so, you know, in some cases, I can see why someone might, you know, spend 50 or 60 quid on it secondhand, which they do tend to be available for about that level on eBay. And certainly as a backup device, you know, it's a justifiable purchase. I suspect many people who've got the N97 have kind of moved on to another device. But if they fancy playing around with it, there's certainly plenty of potential there to, you know, have a bit of fun with the device and kind of get something more out of it, even if they, you know, kind of relegate it to the backup device position, which I believe is what you kind of have it as now, Steve.
Yeah, with custom firmware and Gravity and Opera Mini and Mail for Exchange running for email, it is a complete backup device that has covers all the essentials of the smartphone experience without any of the actual applications, which many people would say is a contradiction in terms. But as you say, for a backup device that can do an awful lot, and it's got a pretty good camera still, I reckon that's not too bad at all. Let's just talk briefly about a possible upgrade path for Symbian owners. We did mention the Lumia 920, this recently launched by Nokia in New York, their Windows Phone 8 device with PureView Phase 2 camera. That's one of the options, but we ought to just acknowledge on this podcast that Symbian owners can go one of a number of ways. One is to, of course, stay with Symbian with devices like the 808, but I guess where do we start, Rafe? Android, iOS, Windows Phone, I guess those are the three options. Which device would you recommend people look at first?
Well, it's always difficult because everyone's slightly different in their choices. And we did mention this briefly in the last podcast. I think the first one to look at is the Lumia 920, because I think a lot of people, it's not necessarily about the platform. You know, they're loyal to one particular manufacturer and kind of some of the things that they represent. But perhaps we'll come back to the Lumia 920 at the end, because I can talk a little bit more about that, having held the device and having a bit of a chance to think about it and look into some of the technical detail. We obviously had the iPhone 5 announced relatively recently, and that's now hitting the shops now, although if you start thinking about doing an order now, you're probably going to have to wait a month or two before getting your hands on it. But that remains very much a viable option. I will say I think most people who are going to switch to iPhone have probably already done so, and I think the limitations of the iPhone are well known. With the iPhone 5, there isn't really any big changes. You're getting a slightly longer screen. But for a lot of people who like the one-handed device, you know, the slightly smaller device size, slightly smaller screen size, I actually think the iPhone represents one of the most attractive options. I suspect, though, that in most cases, it's going to be other factors that will either sway you or, you know, say, no, I don't want an iPhone. There's been a lot of hoo-ha over Maps, actually, with the latest update. There's been some pretty amusing blog posts around all of this. But it is, I think, an important reminder of the Maps functionality is actually something you do need to look at quite carefully when you're deciding to move on from Symbian, simply because you're probably not going to find the same level of map functionality on any other device. And that's because, you know, Nokia have spent a lot of money, invested a lot of money over the years, and actually the Nokia Map solution really is very good indeed. The main issue here, I think, for people will be check global coverage, because it tends to be that the other competing platforms don't have the same global coverage. And also, I guess the big one is offline maps. Now, Google with the Android devices, they kind of had a hybrid approach. But to me, that really doesn't feel like offline maps, because it tends to be basically you can get a city at a time. So it's not very convenient if you're going traveling in another country where you're doing any reasonable amount of driving, you'll go over the limits for that and you'll end up having to download it abroad, which is what you're trying to avoid.
And you also can't plan routes offline with Android Maps. It's just simply downloading a section of maps that you can browse around the map, but you can't do anything with it.
That's right. So, I mean, yes, there is some offline functionality, but to all intents and purposes, if you're using it for navigation, no. Of course, Nokia Drive on the Lumia devices, that does have offline functionality, but it's not in Nokia Maps, kind of the pedestrian, the map browsing thing. That is going to change in Windows Phone 8, so I think actually it's a really big point in favour of the Lumia 920, and it will also probably apply to other Windows Phone devices, which kind of brings me to the second device to talk about, which is the HTC 8X. I think you can put that in as a serious contender, simply because HTC has now got to the point where they're doing some really first-class design on their smartphones, And, you know, for a Windows Phone device, I think it makes a perfectly viable alternative to the Lumia 920. It's a very slim and sleek design. It's almost like a blade, so it's thinner than the 920, and it feels a lot thinner in the hand because it's got tapered edges. It's sort of reminiscent of the design style used in the One X, which is the Android series that HTC do. And I'd actually recommend the One S possibly over the One X, but they're both great devices. So as Android devices, those are two right near the top of my list. And I'd add the Galaxy S3 from Samsung to that as well. So those are kind of the devices, let's say the One X, the One S, the Galaxy S3, and then the 8X, and then the Lumia 920 and the iPhone 5 is kind of the top-end smartphones that people will have a choice from. And I expect those to kind of be the big ones going into the Christmas season. You can bring in various other Android devices, Steve. I mean, do you have any you'd add to that?
Well, I've always been recommending the Galaxy Nexus simply because I can't stand the way manufacturers keep changing the skins and adding UI elements and changing menus and adding functions you never use. It just completely gets in my wick. Having said that, the Galaxy S3 is probably the tip of the Android hardware league in terms of quality of components and build and so forth.
And I guess you might add the Galaxy Note and the Note 2 to that list. I mean, that's moving more towards the midway point between a tablet and a phone, and I'm personally not a fan at all of that form factor. I really don't like having to use two hands in quite such an obvious way. I mean, most of these devices that we're talking about can be used one-handed to some extent, and I think anyone who's coming from a Symbian device is likely to want to maintain that.
Yeah, you mentioned you reckon the HTC 8X, which is their new Windows Phone 8 device coming out next month, I guess. You reckon it's probably a better bet than the Lumia 920 in some ways. I can't think of any ways, apart from if you really want a really, really thin and light phone, that the Lumia 920 wouldn't win. It's got better, 920's got better camera, it feels more solid in the hand, it's got a larger screen, probably a clearer screen as well. In what ways does the 8X win?
Yeah, it's a good question, this, and I was trying to be balanced about it, and I can now sing the praise of the 920, feeling that I've done that. The 8X, I would say, will be seen by most people as a superior or a more fashionable design, and it's because it's thinner, and, you know, it has all the basic standards of, you know, these new Windows Phone 8 devices in terms of NFC, the dual-core 1.5 gigahertz processor. But if you look a little bit more closely, while I think people can make an argument in design terms that it's the superior device, I mean, I think that actually rather underrates the 920 design myself, because if you actually look at the comparative thickness, there's not that much difference. The really big one, which I guess will affect some people, is the weight. It's something like 130 grams versus 180 grams. You know, it's almost 50% again. So I think for some people that could be an issue, but as you say, if you actually look into the detail of the camera on the 8X, I expect it to actually be the best of the rest. You know, HTC established a good reputation for their cameras, but it's not as good as the Nokia device, it's not as good as an N8, it's not as good as an 808, and I expect the 920 to be significantly better and a lot more forgiving of kind of the happy snap style photography that you tend to get on the smartphone. The screen, as you say, is better. I actually think the thing about the screen is it's going to be better in sunlight, but also the super sensitive touch, being able to use it with a glove, that's a big deal for me. But the really big one is the kind of the refresh rate. It's going to be about 60 hertz as opposed to 30 hertz. So when you're scrolling, you get a much smoother sensation. And it's, you know, the screen is the thing you interact with more than anything else on the device. So I'm always a bit surprised more attention doesn't get paid to it. You mentioned some of the other things there. There's the wireless charging is an obvious one. I think that's a nice extra, maybe a bit gimmicky. The internal memory, it's 32 gigabytes as opposed to 16 gigabytes. So all of those do tend to make me say, if you're coming from a Nokia device, and it might be the N8, might be something else, the 920 is definitely the device to look at. If you're coming from maybe a mid-tier device, you might want to look at the 820, which has many of the same characteristics but cuts things down. It actually does have the benefit of having a micro SD card, so if that's important to you, you know, definitely worth taking a look. But you know, having talked to quite a lot of Nokia owners, you know, they're saying the reason we haven't upgraded is because there's been missing things in Windows Phone. And I agree absolutely. We've actually had articles on the site about this. we don't actually have the full feature list of Windows Phone 8 yet. There's been all these device announcements, but basically no one's been allowed to do anything more than take a photograph or scroll up and down the start screen. That's because Microsoft's keeping things very close to their chest. So we haven't got a full picture yet. Certainly reading between the lines and some of the things that have come out do suggest that many of the holes are being fixed, but we won't get a complete picture of that until there's a formal announcement or until we've started playing with the devices. So I think this is a topic we're going to have to revisit. But I think the thing to ask you is, I'm sure the audience will want to know, Steve, as kind of the ultimate Symbian user, and you're using an 808, do any of these other devices attract you? I know you wrote on the piece earlier this week that you'd rather have an 808 over an iPhone 5, but any of the others even sort of catch your attention?
Well, obviously I'm looking forward to playing with the camera in the Lumia 920, because that's right up my street. Having said that, it's good, there's a sealed battery in that device, and that's something that always puts me off. I had my recent woes with the Lumia 800, and basically it was completely bricked and dead for a week when I tried to revive it, and I just can't have that happening on a device which I'm going to depend on day to day. The Samsung Ative S is their new Windows Phone 8 device now, so we don't know very much about that at all, because they didn't really show it off in any great depth. Do you know, Rafe, if that's got a removable battery? I have a feeling that if it's similar to the Galaxy S3, then it will, and that's a major plus point for that device.
Yes, I believe it has. I mean, I haven't seen this one in person, so I can't be sure. But as you say, it's kind of, I think it would be fair to say it's inspired by the Galaxy S3 design, although I understand it's got it uses metallic materials in the finish rather than the plastics. So yes, it's going to be worth keeping an eye on. I mean, in all of this, we haven't talked about the kind of the software side of things. And one of the things that's made the Nokia devices stand out has been kind of a commitment to these extra bits of software, be it City Lens or Nokia Drive, and also exclusive from third parties. So I think that might actually play into people's decision as well. So it'll be interesting to see what Nokia comes out with. And, you know, that app question is an important one, because for some people, that's going to dictate their choice of device. And there's no doubt that, you know, Android and iOS continue to have a very significant lead there. It's not as bad as it was a year ago. There are a lot more apps on Windows Phone. It's just coming up to the 125,000 point now. And there's going to be, I think, a whole bunch more with Windows Phone 8. And of course, the other thing you need to consider when making this decision is it is becoming part of a wider ecosystem. You know, with the Symbian devices, we kind of used to them being fairly singular devices, but now, you know, the way they interact with devices around them, be that, you know, TVs, hi-fis, computers, or, you know, wearable computing devices, is becoming more important. You know, so one of the reasons you might choose the iPhone 5 is kind of interaction with an Apple TV and Air Display, being able to, you know, view video very easily. The same will apply to kind of the Windows Phone devices with the Xbox Smart Glass, but also some other bits and pieces coming in. And Android, a lot of the recent devices have support for Bluetooth 4, which has some interesting implications for, you know, syncing with things like the Moto Active accessory, and also the upcoming Fitbit kind of pedometers and GPS trackers and things like that. So there's actually kind of more to consider than just the device itself. Sometimes you might want to consider its wider place in the ecosystem. And I guess with Windows Phone, of course, it's a tie-in with Windows 8. That's similar. It's not called Metro anymore, but that tile, that kind of chromeless and typographic heavy design emphasis, is, you know, coming more apparent. And actually, I think there's a lot to be said for kind of that similar user experience across your PC, maybe your tablet, and then on your phone as well. And of course, maybe on the TV and on a console or something like that. So it's, you know, a really interesting time. And kind of my end thought on this is, it is getting to the point where I think you can make a good argument that, you know, the older Symbian devices, something like the N8, you know, a year ago, I would have said, you know, upgrade to another Symbian device. Now there is the option of an 808, but I think more and more people will be considering where to go other than that. And I have to say my recommendation probably would be the Lumia 920, but it will vary for people depending on their priorities.
And of course, that is quite a big device, and that might be quite a jump for many people, for example, using 701s and E6s and so on. And you asked me where I'll be going. For me, it's about which devices I actually love, which devices steal my heart, and I would, you know, not leave home without them, and I'd be distraught if they became inoperable or got stolen. Devices like the N8 and the 808 fit that category. The Nokia E6 is kind of in that category, although I have a love-hate relationship because of some of the well-known restrictions of the tiny screen, for example. But none of the Windows Phone devices, none of the Android devices, certainly not the iPhone, I can appreciate the devices which are really good, I can appreciate all the pros, and yet none of them really has grabbed me to the extent that I actually want to put my main sim in it and use it day after day after day. Not one single device has grabbed me in that way. So maybe the 920, maybe the 820, maybe one of those two devices, maybe the Ativa S. I'm going to get a review iPhone 5 in next week, so I think that's an unlikely candidate. But I do like to try them all and watch this space. And do remember, people listening to this, we do have allaboutwindowsphone.com with its own podcast, hosted by Ewan Spence. So you can listen to that if you want the Windows Phone perspective on the industry and what's happening over in that part of the world. I think we're done, Rafe. We've got through all the topics, and we'll be talking to people in about 10 days or so.
We will be, yes. I guess that there's just one more device I should mention, courtesy of a friend of mine in New York just prompted me to say this. So if you're listening, hi, Andy. The Nokia N9 is also an option for some people. If you've got used to kind of being on a band ecosystem, actually the N9 is still a pretty attractive device and might be another alternative that people would go for, especially as it's coming down in price now. You can get it on the second-hand market for pretty good value, and there's still some potential there. And I guess with Jolla Mobile doing things, there might be some interest continuing that kind of Mego area. So just another one to maybe watch out for. I think that's one for the geeks rather than the mass consumers. But we do know the sort of people listening to this podcast. So so there we go. But yeah, goodbye from me for this week. And please join us next time.
We are indeed geeks, yes. And I'd love to come back to that topic of the N9 and what's good and bad about possibly hopping across from one dead system ecosystem to another dead ecosystem. There's still plenty to recommend that as well. We'll do that maybe next time, Rafe. In the meantime, thank you very much for listening. This has been the AllAboutSymbian.com Insight Podcast. Goodbye.